There are 7 million residents of the territory of Hong Kong, and for the second weekend running, perhaps almost 2 million of them attended massive peaceful protests in the semi-autonomous city. Directly at issue, a piece of legislation backed by the city's chief executive, Carrie Lam, whose name was being chanted there by the tape that you just heard from the streets of Hong Kong, that would allow for foreign nationals arrested in Hong Kong to be sent for trial to places with which the city doesn't currently have extradition agreements, which would include mainland China. This legislation is backed by Beijing. The chief executive is picked by Beijing. Well, with these giant protests, one last Sunday, one this weekend, and some in between, perhaps as many as a quarter of Hong Kong residents have now come out to the streets to protest this legislation. There have been some clashes with police. A protester has died. All of it an indication of the gravity of the question that they are collectively raising. Can Hong Kong maintain some independence from the control of mainland China? Here with me to discuss these protests is Victoria Tinbor Hui, who's an associate professor of political science at the University of Notre Dame, specializing in Hong Kong politics, and she herself is originally from Hong Kong. Professor, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Kyle.
Can you lay out some context here for us? Like, how does Hong Kong's government work? In what ways is Hong Kong dependent or tied to mainland China? And in what ways is it independent of China?
So, technically speaking, the government should be independent of China. So it should enjoy autonomy under the foreign affairs and military affairs. Then everything should just be done with a high degree of autonomy. The problem is that, effectively, what you said, the chief executive, who really enjoys a lot of prerogatives, is not really accountable to the people of Hong Kong, but handpicked by Beijing. So then what people call the Western District, because it is Beijing's liaison office located in Western District, has been actually giving a lot of instructions to how the chief executive should govern Hong Kong. So that's really the big problem.
Yeah, there was, I understand, and I'm not a huge, knower of all things Hong Kong history, but my understanding is that there was an agreement to transfer Hong Kong away from British control that contained a promise of universal suffrage, of allowing all adult residents and citizens to vote in direct elections, essentially. But I guess the question I have, given these protests, is how much of Hong Kong's government is directly elected by its residents?
Very little. So the chief executive is elected by a very small 1,200 people election committee, and the legislative council, it has 70 seats. Half of them are returned by functional constituencies, and most of those are corporate votes of, a dozen votes. And then 35 of those seats are returned by geographical constituencies. The problem is that a lot of the pro-Beijing, pro-establishment candidates, they have a lot of money and resources. So the Democratic camp often basically cannot really have any say in the legislative council. They always voted down. This is why people take their voices to the street.
Yeah. And you point out, this sort of all has a direct connection back to these protests that put so many people on the streets this weekend. But I think just another question for context's sake here, my understanding of the breakdown of this legislative council, the legislative body, is that it is something like 2/3 pro-Beijing. Is that right?
Yes.
Why is that the case?
So they always have enough votes to pass whatever the chief executive wants. It is the case because, as you said earlier, that in 1984, London and Beijing agreed to the Sino-British Joint Declaration, in which Hong Kong people promised a high degree of autonomy, Hong Kong people ruling Hong Kong under a one country, two systems model. And so people expected that, well, we are going to have democracy, we can rule Hong Kong. Except that the basic law, Hong Kong's mini-constitution, which was released in 1990, then provides for very specific steps of how Hong Kong could get to the genuine election. And a lot of the composition of the Legislative Council and the Chief Executive is very clearly laid out until 2007-2008. And then when the time was getting close, Beijing issue a decision, oh, we don't want to do that. We're not ready. We have to wait for another 10 years. And the umbrella movement broke out because just when we were thinking that, oh, 2017 is coming around, this is time, it's our chance.
Right.
And Beijing issue another decision that you, that can be one person, one vote, but we decide who the candidates can be, two or three of them screened by Beijing.
Yeah. So just to sort of summarize the context that we've been going through here to all these protests, it's that for the past, you know, two decades now or more, there's been this sort of push and pull about how much direct control should the people of Hong Kong have over their own government. There has been, you mentioned the umbrella movement, which is, you know, a push for more direct democracy, the ability to pick the people who run to represent to be the chief executive of the island. But the poll is that Beijing says that the overall leader of this territory should be basically handpicked by Beijing, and that the people of Hong Kong are not ready for direct democracy. I'm summarizing that adequately.
Yes.
Okay. Perfect. Well, hold that thought, Professor Victoria Tinbor Wei from the University of Notre Dame. We're going to come back in a few minutes and pick up the discussion. A hugely important protest going on in Hong Kong with as many as 2 million people taking to the streets over the weekend to express their dissatisfaction with legislation that would make the territory more dependent on Beijing. But we are going to first take a quick break here on Air Talk with a live news update with Tammy Trujillo. Two Sundays ago, more than a million people, marched in Hong Kong to demonstrate against proposed legislation that critics would say made Hong Kong a little bit more closely tied to the government in mainland China, from which Hong Kong is supposed to be independent. This last weekend, this Sunday, almost 2 million people came out to attend even bigger, massive, peaceful protests in the city of Hong Kong. And we are here to discuss those protests with Victoria Tinbor Wei, an associate professor of political science at the University of Notre Dame. And before we had to take that quick news break there, we were discussing the push and pull between, the sort of idea of more democracy, more direct democracy in Hong Kong versus the amount of control that should be exercised by Beijing over Hong Kong's internal affairs. In that context, we have this legislation come up that would allow Hong Kong's chief executive to decide on a case-by-case basis whether to extradite a foreign national accused of a crime to places that Hong Kong may not even have an extradition agreement with. Professor Tinbor Wei, talk us through what was that legislation meant to do? Why was it proposed? What problem was it meant to solve? And why is it so controversial?
Okay. Well, first of all, I just want to clarify that the Sino-British Joint Declaration promises Hong Kong a high degree of autonomy, Hong Kong people ruling Hong Kong, but not independence. So just want to emphasize that.
Sure.
And then, but of course, it also means that Hong Kong government should have the independence to run its own business so far as it is not about foreign affairs or military issues. And so what happened to the extradition bill is that this is more or less the last straw in a long series of efforts to erode Hong Kong's freedom, to erase the firewall between the two systems, the mainland system and the Hong Kong system. Hong Kong has several pillars, important pillars that we inherited from the pre-1997 era: freedom of expression, and independent judiciary, and independent bureaucracy that really takes care of the entire territory's interests rather than serving just as loyal followers of the governor. And free press. Over the years, Beijing has been controlling every single pillar except the last one that they haven't really made enough inroad into, is the independent judiciary. So by sending people in Hong Kong back to mainland China, which means that this last firewall, this last pillar of freedom is going to be gone too. So a lot of people, during the previous Sunday's march, not the yesterday, many of them did not believe that their people power could really change the bill. But they were also fearful that this would really be the last time that they could legally protest. And many people fear that the bill is targeted not just some genuine Hong Kong, they're in hiding through the Xi Jinping's very massive campaign against corruption. But also, a lot of dissidents and people who continue to commemorate the June 4th vigil in Hong Kong.
Yeah. Victoria Tinbor Wei is a Hong Kong specialist from the University of Notre Dame. With us also is Gabriel Law, who's a spokesperson for the Hong Kong Forum Los Angeles, a nonprofit that promotes democratic development in Hong Kong and in China and is originally from Hong Kong. This weekend, there was a three-day hunger strike that he was one of the organizers of in Monterey Park that was held in support of the Hong Kong protests. Gabriel Law, thank you so much for being with us on Air Talk.
Good morning.
I'm wondering, just first of all, your general thoughts. I mean, just to see those pictures that we saw on the news of streets chock full of people of so many different ages in support of these, you know, quote unquote, pro-democracy protests.
Yes, I think Hong Kong people did a really great demonstration to how protests should be done to the world. There were also images about people cleaning up afterwards of the 8 or 9 hours of protests. None of the properties were damaged. Everyone helps out everyone almost. Zero violence. No one's got hurt until we get to the police. So overall, just a really, really great feeling. And I think within a week, to have 1 million and then 2 million people took to the streets was probably unheard of ever in human history. We actually did a check to see, you know, not to try to get bragging rights or anything, but we find that we are probably number 2 in world record in terms of mobilizing number of people to take to the streets.
Yeah. And as we were talking about, Mr. Law, with the professor Victoria Tinbor Wei, the sort of the importance of this legislation, which I think we should probably say at this juncture, Hong Kong's chief executive, Carrie Lam, apologized on Sunday, delaying the controversial extradition legislation. The protesters didn't see the apology as sincere. They want Lam to resign, the legislation to be shelved for good. I guess I'm curious to know what you see the importance of this legislation as being. As we were discussing with the professor, it's this big pillar of the Hong Kong democratic promise. On the other hand, you know, it's extradition legislation. It seems really technical to someone coming at it from the outside. And I'm wondering if you can help us understand the importance of it to you.
I believe that as Americans, we still have we should have more worry about this particular measure. In essence, if you are an American businessman, not even actually arriving at Hong Kong to travel, or even if you're at the airport just for a transit purpose in Hong Kong, if your enemy in China wants to drum up some charges against you, they can ask the Hong Kong police to arrest you.
And of course, Hong Kong, a major international business hub.
Exactly. So it puzzles everyone. What's the urgency to pass this amendment? Hong Kong has consistently been ranked as one of the safest cities in the world. There's no major crime one way or the other that has happened in the past 20 years or so. So why do we have no consultation? Why do we, after 1 million people take to the streets, the government just said that in essence, they would just try to do a better job in communicating the amendment bill to the people. This is absolutely needless. It does not need to happen.
Yeah.
Probably triggered so many people to take to the streets.
Well, let me ask the professor about that, Victoria Tinbor Wei. There were arguments made that there were legitimate policy wrinkles here that the legislation was meant to smooth out. For example, recently a Hong Kong native was suspected of killing his pregnant girlfriend while the two were on vacation in Taiwan. But Hong Kong had no extradition agreement with Taiwan, so they couldn't send this suspected killer off for trial. This case has been cited as a reason for passing changes to these extradition laws. But Professor, I'm wondering, is that legitimate or was that just pretext for action here?
It is definitely a pretext because Taiwan, actually, they said that we tried to approach the Hong Kong side many, many times, that there are many different ways to settle this. Except that the Hong Kong government has been saying, oh, we have to really get this bill passed through before we can even then talk about how exactly we should make our arrangements. And then the Taiwan government has also been saying that the bill is going to treat Taiwan as just a province of China, and this is something they would never accept. So there's really no particular urgency for how, for just because that this guy is likely to be released, and then we have nothing to do to actually put him to justice. It's just an excuse. And then also the pro-democracy legislators have been offering all kinds of amendments and revisions that could handle the case. But Carrie Lam rejected every single proposal.
Professor Victoria Tinbor-Wei of the University of Notre Dame and Gabriel Law, a spokesperson for Hong Kong Forum Los Angeles, here with us to discuss massive protests on the streets of Hong Kong. We will be back in 1 minute to discuss those protests even further. This is Air Talk. Almost 2 million people in the city of Hong Kong, semi-autonomous from mainland China, dependent on it in some ways, but independent of mainland China in others. Huge pro-democracy protests, all targeted against a piece of extradition legislation that would have more closely tied Hong Kong to mainland China, legislation that now has been delayed in the wake of these protests. And we're discussing this legislation with Gabriel Law, a spokesperson for Hong Kong Forum Los Angeles, a nonprofit that promotes democratic development in Hong Kong and China. Mr. Law, we've seen before, our other guest, Professor Victoria Tinbor-Wei, mentions in 2014, we saw hundreds of thousands of protesters that took to the streets to push for more direct democracy. This was called the Umbrella Movement. And my understanding is that they didn't get much of what they wanted. They didn't get the direct elections that they had been hoping for. They didn't get more independence from Beijing's handpicked leader, the person who's putting forward this legislation. I'm wondering if this time feels any different, and if so, how?
I think it felt very different, not just by the sheer amount of people who went on the street, but also I think within the more progressive side of things, there seem to be signs of more unity. In the past, there were the marches, and then there were the people staying on the streets to occupy the roads and have conflict with the police.
This was back in 2014, where this... Yes.
Right. And these times, similar things happen, but both sides are showing restraint to not accuse each other. In the past, there were, you guys are trying to incite riot, and that's not right. And then the other side would go, well, you guys just march and didn't do anything afterwards, and nothing would get changed that way. But this time around, it seems that both sides know that there is a role for everybody. And if we can just work together on this, if you want to march. If you want to be a little bit more proactive in confronting the authority, go ahead and do it. So that seems to be one big change. And may I also mention that, unfortunately, there was also a death.
Yes.
That happened on Saturday. So that also kind of bring an extra layer of emotion into the whole movement as well.
And there were candlelight vigils to mark the death of this 35-year-old who fell to his death while he was hanging a protest banner. Professor Tinbor-Wei, I want to bring you in here on this question about how this might differ from the Umbrella Movement, which we saw 5 years ago in Hong Kong. Similarly, massive protests with hundreds of thousands of people. But I've seen it said, 2014 was around the time of the Occupy movement here in the United States, which would probably be the closest analog, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, to what we saw. But, in the same way that the Occupy movement dragged on, and we saw the message of Occupy sort of grating on American audiences, people sort of retreated into their respective camps. It became divisive over time. I've seen that said about the Umbrella movement as well. Is there the danger of this same kind of grating and sort of erosion of support for that movement in the same way that we've sort of seen the Occupy movement fade into the background, and eventually the message in the moment kind of lost its potency?
Yeah, you're quite right. And I also agree with Gabriel's arguments that things actually met better this time. So one thing I want to say is that the size of the Hong Kong's protests are largest in the world in terms of per capita, because Hong Kong's population is only 7 million.
Right.
But otherwise, there were probably way more people protesting in China in 1989, because protests happened all across, not just in Beijing. And also during the Arab uprisings in 2011 as well. But as for what is exactly is the most important difference between the umbrella movement of 2014 and today, one big difference.
Professor Victoria Tinbor-Wei is on Skype joining us here, and it sounds like we've lost her Skype connection here. But I want to turn to Gabriel Law, who's a spokesperson for the Hong Kong Forum Los Angeles. And, you know, one of the things that we've heard is that the legislation that sparked these protests is now delayed. It would, you know, what protesters have asked for is that the legislation be, you know, thrown out altogether, and that the executive of the territory, Carrie Lam, stepped down. Now, Carrie Lam was picked by Beijing. If she steps down, would they not select another pro-Beijing leader to just follow right after her and continue on with the same agenda?
That's almost a certainty, except that when this new person comes into power, it may take some time for he or she to, you know, form her own group of followers and so on, and plan for her legislative agenda. So maybe we will have a little bit of a breathing room, and with that, there may, you know, more may change.
Right.
So it is definitely not an end game per se. We all understand that most likely somehow this may still happen, but we won't just sit at home and do nothing and see this pass.
Gabriel, you were one of the organizers of a 3-day hunger strike over this weekend here in Monterey Park over the weekend, held in support of the Hong Kong protests. I wonder if you can tell me about that. What was that like? I understand that you were camped out at Barnes Memorial Park in Monterey Park. What kind of did people who come by understand what you were protesting? Are there connections that were made with people to spread the message more broadly? Or was it more important that there be this act of solidarity, not necessarily that you get the message out within this community?
I think it was definitely to be able to strike up conversations with people who may not know the specifics of why this amendment bill is so dangerous. We were able to have deep discussion with many, many Chinese Americans in the community on the issue. So that was definitely very worthwhile to do. We actually changed from 3 days to 2 days, knowing that 2 million people took to the streets. So we end the hunger strike a little bit early and ended with a rally with about 300 people or so last night. So it was more important to for us to reach out to the community and to have an exchange on opinion on how we should move on next.
Right.
Than just to, you know, adhere to a strict schedule.
Mr. Law, we've only got about a minute left, but I want to ask you in just, you know, 45 seconds or so, did you have any exchange with Chinese Americans who are of the pro-Beijing mindset, who might be suspicious of what the Hong Kongers are doing here?
Maybe not at the rally, but on a personal level, many of forum members have friends and family holding opposite views, and we know that it is a long, it is a long game. We need to educate them bits by bits, and time seems to be on our side.
Gabriel Law is a spokesperson for Hong Kong Forum Los Angeles, organized a hunger strike this weekend in support of massive democracy protests in Hong Kong. Mr. Law, thank you for joining us here on Air Talk.
Thank you.
And Victoria Tinbor-Wei, a professor of political science, associate professor at the University of Notre Dame, specializing in Hong Kong politics. Thank you so much for joining us, professor, as well.
Thank you.
Imagine if something like 1 million Angelenos took to the streets. That's about 1/4 of the city's population. That's what happened in Hong Kong over the weekend, all to support efforts to kill legislation that was seen as making the semi-autonomous island territory more dependent and closer tied to Beijing. We have been discussing it all morning here on Air Talk. I'm Kyle Stokes, in for Larry Mantle all this week. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you right back here tomorrow.